Welcome back to a special correspondence edition of Off the Record with Jonathan Osteen, Kathy Gray, Zoe Clark, and Bill Ballinger. Our lead story, what else? The virus and the state's struggle with same. Sit in with us as we get the inside out. Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganstoptop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Off the Record. So how are we all doing?
Holding in there, right?
It's been a crazy week.
Yeah. Terrible story, isn't this thing?
It's, I think, one of the most intense stories that has happened to the country and the world, you know, as many are saying, since 9/11, and in many ways, even before that.
When do we think we hit the peak? What is our guess? And it's only a guess.
I'm not going to provide any medical advice or prognostications.
No, I wasn't asking you to take my temperature.
I don't know. I mean, this has radically altered, you know, everyday life, the state economy, you know, regardless of when the health crisis peaks, this is going to have a ripple effect and reverberate for a long time.
I think we're a ways away from the peak. I mean, the numbers yesterday more than tripled from 115 to 334, I think it was. And so I think that we're just going to continue to see doubling, tripling of numbers for a while.
Well, speaking of numbers, we did an interview with the governor this week, and her medical advisor, the chief medical officer, said we have thousands of cases out there. And I asked the governor about that. Let's see what she had to say.
But there will be deaths in Michigan.
Ironically, about two mere hours before the first virus death was announced, Governor Whitmer knew it was inevitable, which is why she is marshaling all her forces to make sure that death count does not go much higher. And on that front, to protect the thousands of auto workers, she is obviously all in on the decision to halt assembly line work for 2 weeks.
We are in continuing conversations with the leaders of the Big Three as well as the leaders of the UAW. We want to protect people. We want to make sure that we're ready to ramp up to full production when it's safe to do so.
The media basically missed the comments of the state's chief medical officer recently, who said, quote, "There is no question. There are thousands of those who have the virus in our state." The governor has never commented on that statement, but she tells 6 News if her chief medical officer said it, the governor believes it.
I absolutely believe her.
If there are thousands of cases out there, then the numbers that we've been playing with the last 2 weeks are grossly underestimated, and we will get into the thousands?
Tim, I'm not going to predict a number.
On the political front, on various national networks, the governor has criticized President Trump for allegedly not being on top of this issue from the get-go. And this pushback from the state Republican Party chair, accusing the governor of not concentrating on her duties in favor of auditioning for vice president with Joe Biden. To which Ms. Whitmer says,
"Let's take the politics out of this. I'm so tired of everyone trying to politicize this, calling it a hoax, pretending like this wasn't real. Talking in half-truths and hyperbole has only endangered the American public."
Chairwoman Cox says the governor should set aside her partisanship and, quote, "focus on the task at hand." All right, so where do we go from here, Z?
That's a good question, and I think that's the anxiety-provoking answer that none of us have.
Shut down everything. She said she's not going to do that. She does have the power to shelter in place.
She's done it in California already. Right. I think it's inevitable that it may happen.
She said she's not going to do it yet, but Jody Caldoon, the doctor, chief medical executive of the state, she said, you know, basically this is all on a dial. We can crank up the dial as needed. So certainly, you know, they see what other states are doing. The governor's been working closely with governors from other states. They've sort of been taking turns about who goes first, but they're all eventually doing the same thing. So I don't know if we'll get to that point that California has, but it's certainly a possibility.
Well, I think that they're waiting to see how her executive orders that she's already put in there, how those are affecting these numbers. I mean, we've got the schools closed. We've got assemblages of 50 people or more banned. We've got bars and restaurants and gyms and movie theaters and all sorts of things closed. What kind of impact is that having on the spread of the virus? So I think that we've got to wait to see how they affect the numbers.
Isn't it true that the state of emergency she's declared lasts only until April 13th, at which point the legislature has to vote to continue it or not?
It's 28 days.
And let's
days.
See what they, well, that's 28 is April 13th, and when it gets to that point, that is going to be a key moment where the Republican-controlled legislature decides, do we stop, you know, doing what we've been doing for the last 28 days? And you don't know whether Whitmer's going to agree with that or not.
Well, there's two threads because that is the legislative way. There's also talk that she does have, through another emergency act, the ability as the chief executive to continue it. So that's, you know, hasn't happened in decades and decades. But depending on, I think, what the next few days, I mean, at this point, hours almost, but also weeks looks like, I think there is going to be a hunger, depending if these numbers continue to be as high as they are, to possibly see more drastic action. But again, sitting around a table and deciding, you know, what might happen in a week is just not good governance for anyone at this point.
But to Bill's point, though, there will be obviously many key decisions coming up well before that deadline. You know, the governor's restaurant, fitness center, casino ban, that was a two-week order.
And schools until April 6th.
Exactly. So, you know, there's going to need to be big decisions about whether those are extended, how they can be extended, what authority there is to extend them.
And the governor really has been out front on this. I mean, whether it is holding almost daily press briefings or whether it is going on national television, I don't think anyone can say that she hasn't been up front or vocal about what's going on and then answering those questions. Well, now, the questions may not always be answered in a way that folks want, but she has, I think, explained vocally when she is making these orders and why.
In that interview, she said, I have extraordinary powers. This is an interesting story about our democracy. Mm-hmm. Governors, and not to make lightly of this, mm-hmm. but governors love it when they can do stuff on their own. Because all of these governors that we have covered are control freaks, and I mean that in an affectionate way. Mm-hmm. They're doers. Get in and we do stuff. I don't have to mess around. So here we are now, and the legislature will have input. But it'll just depend on what it looks like at that moment. The legislature is not going to say, Governor, go ahead and open up all those shots, and we have a death count that's, you know, off the charts.
And I think that's what I mean, right, is it's very hard to determine, you know, in 28 days from when she put this in, where we're going to be, right? And we'd all like to believe that we can make sure that there isn't going to be a lot of infighting between the legislature and the governor, depending on what happens in the next week or two.
She also has the power to shut the auto plants down after this 2 weeks. She has that authority. I asked her. She said, I do. And so the economy, I know that's not the most important story, but at some point, somebody has to look at the impact on the fewer dollars coming into state government.
Oh, I think the economy is the story.
It's all a balancing act right now, certainly. You know, how do you protect public health, but also try and provide relief from some of the impacts. So we have seen, of course, the governor extend unemployment benefits.
Sure.
Small business grants were approved yesterday by the MEDC. The federal government, of course, is talking about various relief packages as well. But yeah, for state government, I mean, it's obviously a subplot here, but this is a fiscal storm brewing. Yeah. I talked to folks about perhaps, you know, the potential of using the rainy day fund. It sounds like that is very much on the table. That was a sacred cow under the Snyder administration. Brian Kelly, his lieutenant governor, has said, this is what the rainy day fund is for.
Right.
So
the
state is spending more to provide relief. It's going to pull in way less in tax revenue because of the economic shutdown. Something's got to give.
Well, in the state legislature approved $125 million for coronavirus response on Tuesday after 10 or 11 hours of backroom negotiations. So the legislature is certainly willing to put their money out there as well.
What was the problem? Why did it take so long? I mean, either we're going to spend the money or we aren't.
Well, I think that there was never a question that they were going to spend the money, but it was how it was going to be allocated. And they approved $25 million last year, so it's now, or last week, and it's now a total of $150 million. So there's $50 million for health care providers, there's $50 million that the governor can use for coronavirus response, and there's $50 million that the legislature has in reserve to put out there for whatever the needs are in the future.
There was also a debate, which was not resolved, over how to address K-12 schools right now, you know, whether they'll get extra funding to pay staff, et cetera, during the forced closure, and also whether they're going to get relief for missing school days. They, of course, have a requirement to provide at least 180 days of classroom instruction. Very unlikely they're going to be able to meet that now, especially if the deadline is extended.
There's been a lot of discussion about the impact on kids using the virtual community to teach when some people don't have access to the internet. I mean, there's a possible disparity here, is there not?
Absolutely.
With the kids. So what do they do about that?
Well, you can't assume that you're going to be able to offer virtual instruction to students this year. I just don't think it's feasible. Maybe some districts might be able to pull it off. I heard Dr. Vitti from Detroit discussing this and saying, you know, some kids don't have computers. It's not feasible for us. Maybe if this goes on to the fall, to next school year, they might be able to offer actual, you know, robust classwork in a virtual setting. But to assume every student is going to have access to that is unrealistic.
There are areas of the state that don't even have access to broadband. So there's the rural urban-suburban divide there, too.
And I think, you know, you're also talking about not just virtual learning, but making sure kids whose only meal of the day is a free lunch are getting food. I mean, I think that is the thing, right? That there are just these sort of, you know, a pyramid of, like, who is most affected right now? And when you say, you know, the economic story may not be the biggest, I mean, I think folks right now who are living paycheck to paycheck, who suddenly are not going to be having those paychecks, right? And maybe going to the grocery store and then unable to even purchase things, right? I mean, those are the effects that we're seeing short term. And trying to just get a way of life a little bit back to normalcy before all of these really big picture things about the future of elections, about how we're going to backfill school days, I think is going to have to take a second seat.
What about the possibility of this crisis altering human behavior going forward? You're talking about online learning at the college level, all this stuff going online. Maybe after this experience is over, people are saying, why do we have all these students on campus crowding into classrooms? Maybe we don't need these buildings.
Yeah, I don't think we get that far, because part of the learning crucible is sitting in the room with other people that are stupid like trying to figure out what's going on.
And if Florida and Miami Beach is in any indication, apparently people still like to be close to each other.
Listen, how would you love to be the governor of Florida right now with that problem of how do you get those kids off that beach? Send in the National Guard, huh?
He's saying, let them stay.
Listen, there are a lot of universities that are already offering completely online coursework. That's not new. It is fascinating to see how ubiquitous the technology has become. You don't realize it until you need it. I did a virtual happy hour on Zoom yesterday, meeting with other people in my community remotely to talk in a way that we can't right now.
How did you all share drinks?
You know, we
held them up. Jonathan never shares drinks anyway, so it wasn't a...
The idea, it was actually a cool idea that everyone could get carry out from one local distillery in town and have a shared communal experience remotely. But anyways, it's interesting to see how this technology is working and how much of it will stick around after, you know, will this become commonplace? On the one hand, it's awesome to see that we're able to do it. On the other hand, it's sort of frightening. Like, is this the dystopian future where we can't go outside and this is the only way we can communicate with each other?
And we are seeing really interesting stories, right, pop up things like distilleries being told by the state that it's okay for them now to be the ones to create hand sanitizer. I mean, you're sort of reading these headlines that, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think we'd all just sort of be shocked. And I think that's also what's been so interesting is the brevity at which the executive orders. I mean, again, you know, take your time machine. 3 weeks ago, and we were talking Biden versus Sanders. And I don't want to say that those And I don't want to say those things are insignificant. But I think it puts all of it in perspective about what state government, right, is here for. And as a society, democracy in general.
Well, let's just go to all voting by the mail. Well, we don't need poll workers.
Well, there are several states that already do that.
Oregon is one of them.
And look at what happened in this past election. What was it, 40 or 50% of people voted by absentee ballot? So I think we're on that road anyway.
I'm not so sure the Republicans are on the road with the D's on that, though.
Well, Republicans wouldn't like it, but there's push already in Michigan to get something different going in terms of voting for November in this state because of this crisis.
And, you know, the impacts that all of this will have on elections, as we were talking about in May, ballot campaigns going out and gathering signatures, whether you are a candidate that is trying to get on the November ballot, you have to have a certain number of signatures to actually have your name show up. Or ballot initiatives like the LGBT ballot initiative. You know, that those are places where you take and you go to big gatherings, right? Art fairs to concerts, and you get folks to sign. And we're not doing that anytime soon.
People who want a graduated income tax are asking the legislature to let them collect signatures online. I don't think the Republicans are going to like that.
I doubt it. I will note, Arizona does allow that for candidates to collect signatures. So there's some states that tried to do that. But yeah, I mean, I just wrote about the petition drive issue yesterday. I mean, less than two weeks ago, on election day or the day before, we saw tons of petitioners out at these huge political rallies gathering tons of signatures. It was a great time for them. Of course, the night of March 10, that everything changed when the governor announced the state's first case. The other group, the LGBT group that Zoe mentioned, they are trying to go to a mail-in petition drive now, where they're going to try and mail petitions to individual people and get them to send them back. But it's a huge obstacle from a group that was, by their account, doing quite well up until that point.
I talked to a woman who has put half a dozen or more petitions on her front porch and has put the word out to all of her people. And she's a very active political activist. And she's got people trotting up to her front porch, signing the petitions. And so I don't know if that's going to get you where you need to be, but
it gives you something to do.
People have to be creative.
And human nature being what it is, the attorney general called us in the other day to talk about all the scamming that is going out there. Hand sanitizer for $60 for a little bottle, and people calling up people who are obviously vulnerable, offering prepaid tests that we'll send out to you.
People are awful. People are just awful.
Man, it just sort of makes you wonder, doesn't it?
I think in times like this, you see the worst of humanity, but you also see the best in a lot of different ways. And again, much like the comparisons that have been made to post 9/11, this is what we see. We see people stepping up and being good to each other and being good to each other's neighbors. And with the increase of social media, I think post 9/11, I was having a conversation with someone. I mean, imagine having Twitter and Facebook post 9/11 and the possible theories and hoaxes, you know, and as a nation, what we would have been like if we had that. And I think this is the first real world crisis in such large terms that we are dealing with both how we all feel, but then it being mirrored on social media for the first time. And that's a really intense thing for many, many people.
What about this thing between the president and the governor?
I think we've been talking a lot about the governor's, you know, fairly drastic action by account of most people who live in Michigan. It just rang false when
charge?
The governor.
There was no charge.
Well,
he said she wasn't being proactive enough.
She actually started it by going on MSNBC and saying the federal government ought to be doing more, blah, blah, blah.
Did she need to do that?
She should have, but, you know, he's a counterpuncher. And so once he saw that, it was Katie bar the door. And of course, he personalized it. He called her failing Michigan governor. And what he said didn't really make a lot of sense because, as Jonathan just said, she's really been proactive in this thing. And the idea that she wasn't doing anything just rang hollow.
But she has continued to put that criticism out there. She was on NBC News last night, an hour-long special, saying that the federal government still isn't doing enough, that they've acted too slowly. So she's one of the people that's out there front and center who's out there criticizing the federal government response.
Although she, as you said, absolutely, but isn't the only one, right? We're hearing from Democratic governors, senators, folks, and some on the right as well, who are saying, look, you know, the federal government, President Trump, did not do enough early enough. And when you watch some of the statements from February, And then look now, going from, you know, it being a hoax to it being a national emergency. I mean, you could get whiplash for some of that in the time period that it changed. But yes, I mean, you know, Governor Whitmer had for quite a bit of time really not taken shots at the president.
Well, that was her personal policy. She had said it's a distraction.
Much like Rick Snyder.
It is a distraction.
We had seen, you know, two consecutive governors of Michigan in a row really just try to distance themselves from any kind of fighting with the president, and that absolutely changed. And whether that is a political motivation to do it or simply that governors are really frustrated and stressed and feel the need to say it, we don't know.
But now here she is going back to him saying, I want money from you to take care of the National Guard.
Exactly.
Where do you suppose that request is going to end up?
Exactly. And the Michigan congressional delegation, bipartisan, did sign a letter saying, please, President Trump and administration, release money to help support the National Guard, which she has already called out here in Michigan. So it's not smart. If you're working cooperatively, you want help from the federal government to make gratuitous attacks on the chief executive.
Well, of course, the underlying pinning of his statements from a political standpoint is that she's being, you know what? I don't want to talk about her being vice president, okay? But she's obviously in play here, and the president's taking note of that.
That's why Laura Cox, the Republican chairman, made that comment. But, you know, I'm not saying that is her motivation. It's just, historically,
that's the furthest thing from her mind
right
now, believe me.
Gretchen Whitmer is a bomb thrower. She always has been. She was in the legislature, and I think she should have restrained herself in this particular case, particularly if she needs help and cooperation from the federal government. Should be all hands on deck. It should be bipartisan. There should not be sniping back and forth. You toss a bomb like that at Donald Trump, and you know what you're going to get, and you're going to be right down in the muck with him.
I'm going to offer a contrarian argument here. Okay. We know that the president cares a lot about appearances. That's why he was watching MSNBC and immediately fired back a tweet. This sort of criticism has been part of the reason Donald Trump has changed and has become much more aggressive about responding to the coronavirus, these exact claims that he wasn't proactive enough, early enough. So I think putting a little pressure on the federal government.
From the governor of Michigan.
I don't know.
He's gotten it from enough other. He's gotten the message.
I think obviously he takes it to heart, judging on his tweet.
That's for sure.
Well, he also has blamed the Chinese for this. If they had only told us, this could have been eliminated.
Well, he's also blamed the Obama administration.
And the Democrats in Congress.
He basically said, you know, what was it, a week ago now? It's hard to keep all the days straight, but that he takes, you know, no responsibility, right, when someone said that.
And, right, so what does our legislature do now? They're on a sort of per-need basis?
So they have one day
a week, indefinitely for the next few weeks.
For the next month, essentially. Yeah, they have one day scheduled. Whether or not they meet those days remains to be seen. I don't think they're going to come back and do more cats and dogs. You know, we saw them on Tuesday.
Literally, Jonathan is not kidding.
Several, they passed emotional support dog regulations while trying to negotiate a supplemental spending bill for coronavirus. I don't think they're going to come back to just do that sort of stuff again. If there is the need to take care of the fiscal health of the state to provide more relief funding, I think we could see them back.
I think the new July 1st deadline is toast.
I think you're right.
Yes.
For getting the budget done.
Well, and think about it, on Tuesday, when they're all supposed to be there, there was 19 members in the House that were absent. There was one senator who was absent, and I think that those numbers are going to grow as this virus continues to spread.
Remember, again, July 1st is only in effect statutorily this year for the first time. It was always just,
we passed it, we can undo it.
A wing and a prayer. Well, they can.
I don't think the governor is even going to want to hold them to that July 1st. And I mean, look at we're not going to know at all what our tax picture revenue is going to look like by then. The federal government is delaying the income tax deadline if you're a payer. The state has already, just for 1 month, but given small businesses an extra month to pay their taxes. When taxes finally do come in, they're going to be way down. And when they come in, we don't know. So making the budget and having any idea what the revenues are actually going to look like is going to be nearly an impossible task.
Right.
This year.
It's fair to say it's not that it's not a priority. It's how much work can you put into something that is changing. You can't, you know, build the car while you're driving it. You can't build a budget while every single day something's new and changing. And as we saw this week, more than 1,000% increase just this week in the number of people with with unemployment claims here in the state. I mean, these are the stories that we're going to be hearing about the state economy.
All right, this is maybe poetic, but we have 2 minutes left to talk about the presidential race. Sure. Has Mr. Biden got this thing wrapped up now?
Sure looks that way.
Yep.
What's Bernie Sanders going to do?
Ooh. I think he's going to have to fold his tent. The question is when.
Well, he's going to want something in the tent before he folds it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think he's in a position to dictate terms to Joe Biden. But look, Joe Biden needs Bernie Sanders and his supporters in particular in November. So Joe Biden has got to be very careful. He keeps Bernie Sanders close to him.
Well, he's made some concessions already. he's done the talking about free college. And that type of thing. So he's moving in a certain direction. So I think that Sanders has got to, you know, the thing is that this coronavirus is just overshadowing everything.
And that's why I'm hesitant to even, prognosticate, because the fact is we've got states that are moving their primary now to June. So although, you know, the delegates seem to be wrapped up in Biden's favor, I mean, we are in a brave new world here. And, votes happening in June, you know, we'll see if conventions even happen.
Right. How about a virtual convention? Wouldn't that be something?
The word virtual before a lot of things is going to become very normal. Who knows, you know, in the couple weeks whether we'll be around this table or not.
All right, guys, thank you for showing up. Keep healthy, wash your hands, and say a little prayer.
Stay safe, everyone, and healthy.
Yeah.
And be kind to each other.
There you go.
Yeah.
See you next week right here on Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganswroadtotop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.